Please join me in Numbers chapter 25, where we're going to pick up our story in verse number 10. A little reminder, which I'm probably going to do on a regular basis now. Some of the material we come across in the stories of Israel during this time period are definitely PG-13. So probably for quite some time, you'll need to keep younger children busy elsewhere while we're doing our studies together. We have just seen the incident referred to as the sin of Baal Peor. The Israelis are encamped in the plains of Moab, otherwise known as Shittim, or the place of the acacia trees. They're on the east side of the Jordan River, right across from Jericho. And they have just recently survived an attempt by Moab to have curses put on them by Balaam, the prophet, the rebel prophet, as we will refer to him. When that didn't work, Moab apparently gives up on the whole prospect, but the Midianites that were cooperating with the Moabites, they get some advice from Balaam, perhaps at a cost, that if they just simply invite a bunch of the Israelis to come up to their worship area at Baal Peor, which is just probably a couple of miles to the northeast from the Israeli encampment. If they can get these Israelis to worship their god Baal and eat the meat of the sacrifices and drink and get drunk and then party by having sexual activity in honor of this big worship time, that God himself will curse the Israelis. And unfortunately, the plan works. A bunch of Israelis do go and participate in this pagan ritual service. And one of them has the gall to bring his, quote, girlfriend, end quote, back to the Israeli encampment, walking right past a service in front of the tabernacle where people are grieving over so many people heading up to this pagan worship site. And the son of the current high priest, a young man, and I don't know, he might have been in his 30s or 40s, named Phinehas, he sees this guy going by, probably drunk and laughing with this woman, follows him back to the Simeon area of the encampment, and stabs them with his spear as they are continuing to have sexual activity there, in direct opposition to what God intended. The Israelis have also been executed any of the leaders that were going along with this this cooperation with the Midianites and this worship site. They've hung their bodies on the tree. And then God strikes down a whole bunch of others, as well as maybe some that the Israelites themselves have to execute. And the total casualty number, we're told, was 24,000. 24,000 dead because of pagan ritual. Verse 10 continues the story. He who is said to Moses, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, has turned back my wrath from the people of Israel, in that he was jealous with my jealousy among them. And when you see the word jealousy a lot of times in the Old Testament context, just substitute the letter Z for the letter J, and you'll have a better appreciation for what we're talking about here. He has zeal. He is all about protecting God's relationship with his people. So he's turned back my wrath from the people of God in that he was zealous with my jealousy among them, so that I did not consume the people of Israel in my jealousy. So God says it could have been a lot worse if this guy had not immediately taken action, and by that kind of chilled the attitudes of a whole bunch of other people that may have continued to engage in this type of rebellious behavior. Verse number 12, "Therefore say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace, and it shall be to him and to his descendants after him the covenant of a perpetual priesthood, because he was zealous for his God and made atonement for the people of Israel." And so we find out that Phinehas becomes the next high priest after his father passes away. He is also famous in the story of the Maccabees because Mattathias, the father of Judas Maccabee, has in his upholding of Judaism and the true faith in Israel toward God against the false faith that's being put into place in the second century BC, mentions the fact that they, as a family, are direct descendants of Phinehas, and that they needed to be as zealous in their fight against idolatry as he was in his. And so, very interesting historical legacy here. Now, verse 14. "The name of the slain man of Israel who was killed with the Midianite woman was Zimri, the son of Salu, chief of the father's house belonging to the Simeonites." And I told you that he was from the Simeonite tribe. "It is highly likely, I think, that his father, Salu, may have been one of the leaders of the Israeli tribes that had gone along with this cross-cultural meeting at Baal Peor, and therefore he was probably stoned to death and his body hung on a tree because that's part of the rebellious group. Now, verse 15 says, "The name of the Midianite woman who was killed was Cozbi, the daughter of Zur, who was the tribal head of a father's house in Midian." So she's actually the daughter of one of the leaders of Midian that put on this event at the direction of Balaam, the bad prophet. And he will end up dead before this story is over as well. Verse 16, "He who is spoke to Moses, saying, harass the Midianites and strike them down, for they have harassed you with their wiles, with which they beguiled you in the matter of Peor and in the matter of Cozbi, the daughter of the chief of Midian, their sister, who was killed on the day of the plague on account of Peor." So God basically says, all right, there will be retribution. There will be an attack upon the Midianites who planned this thing. It's not enough that they've purged the Israelis who joined in this because it was a direct act of warfare against them. That has to be answered. Now, before we get to that story, there's a bit of business that has to take place because of all the deaths that have happened over the past 38 and a half years since the last census was taken. Remember, at the very beginning of the book of Numbers, we had a census where all the men, heads of families effectively, had to be numbered and listed, because each one of them, once they went into the promised land, would receive a piece of family property. Well, all those men, except for two, that were on that list from 38 years ago, they're dead now. And so a new list has to be made from those that are still alive. And we just lost a whole bunch more, didn't we? So chapter 26, and I'm not going to read the whole chapter to you. You can read it on your own if you want all the details. Chapter 26 says, after that plague, he who is said to Moses and to Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, take a census of all the congregation of the people of Israel from 20 years old and upward by their fathers' houses, all in Israel who are able to go to war. So this is going to be everyone that is old enough to be in the militia and who will receive property once they get into the promised land. So Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, take a census of the people from 20 years old and upward. We know that you had to be 20 in order to be in the militia of Israel. You had to be 20 to be considered eligible to receive property in the promised land. And as he who has commanded Moses and the people of Israel who came out of the land of Egypt were, and then it starts listing them. Now, instead of reading the rest of this chapter verbatim, I want to go to one of my charts in my Chronological Companion of the Bible booklet that I provide online if you're interested in it. To chapter number 8, which is entitled The Second Census of Israel. And so it takes this information and compares it to the information from the first census so that we know whether or not there's a gain or loss of members of this tribe as they're getting ready to go into the promised land. And I think you'll be interested in this. So let's start with Reuben. Reuben is going to end up with over 43,000 who will receive inheritance. That is 2,770 less than the last time they had a census. So their tribe has lost people. Simeon's tribe. They now have 22,200 guys that fall into this category of eligibility. That is 37,100 less. So the Simeonite tribe has really dropped off since the previous census. And this probably is the reason why they are simply given little pockets inside the tribe of Judah. And we'll talk about that when it happens. The tribe of Gad has 40,500, but that's 5,150 less than the previous census. So they lost. The first tribe that we get to that's actually got a gain is Judah tribe. They are now listed as 76,500. That's a gain of 1,900. Issachar remains relatively stable. They only lose about 100, and they're now 54,300. Zebulun, they make a bit of a gain. 60,500, that's a gain of over 3,000. Ephraim, they have 32,500 now, which is a loss of 8,000. I lost my scroll here. Just a moment. Ephraim has 32,500. That's a loss of 8,000. Manasseh, which you may remember, Manasseh was the super blessed tribe of Joseph. They now have 52,700. That is a massive gain of 20,500 since the first census. This is the reason why Manasseh is going to end up with property on both the east and the west side of the Jordan River. They need it. Benjamin also has a big gain. They're now at 46,600. That's a plus 10,200 number. Dan, 64,400. That's a gain of 1,700. Asher, 53,400. That's also a pretty big gain of 11,900. So they're super blessed. Naftali, they have 45,400, and that's a gain of 8,000. And then the Levites, who, of course, they're not part of the militia, and so they are listed from children, baby boys of 1 month and older. They now have 23,000 that fall into that category. That's a lot of Levites. That's a gain of 1,000. That's how we summarize everything here in chapter 26 of Numbers. Now, there is something to be noted toward the end of the chapter. When you get to verse 57, we're talking about the Gershon clan and the Kohathite clan of Levi. And there is a group mentioned in verse 59 that says the name of Amram's wife, and Amram was the father of Moses and Aaron, was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt, and she bore him Amram, Aaron, and Moses, and Miriam, their sister. So this is the passage that kind of helps us understand the family tree of the leaders of Israel at this time. Now, finally, at the end, we have this summary in chapter 26, verse 63. These were those listed by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who listed the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. So this is the second census that was needed before they went into the Promised Land. Verse 64, but among these, there was not one of those listed by Moses and Aaron the priest who had listed the people of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. So there was nobody on this second census that was on the first census, because all the first census people are dead, with one, two exceptions. Verse 65, for he who is had said to them, they shall die in the wilderness. Not one of them was left except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. And I will emphasize again later that as they go into the Promised Land in a few more months, the oldest Israeli men are only about 59. Because they had to be, 58, because they had to be under the age of 20 whenever the rebellion happened at the beginning of the Exodus. And so you had 20 years, you had 20 and 58, and you end up, 20 and 38, and you end up with the 58 number as the oldest. So there's no one over 60 amongst the Israelis when they go into the Promised Land, except for Caleb and Joshua. They're in their 80s. So they are considerably older as the leaders than those that are in leadership. Okay, now, chapter 27. After the census is taken, this happens. Then drew near the daughters of Zelophehad. Let me try that name again. Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, from the clans of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. So there's the genealogy. The names of his daughters were Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Dorza. So these ladies stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the chiefs and all the congregation at the entrance of the tent of meeting, saying, our father died in the wilderness. He was not among the company of those who gathered themselves against he who is in the company of Korah, but died for his own sin. So he wasn't one of the active participants in the big rebellion, But yeah, he did have problems and he died. So he's not around anymore. But here's the problem. He had no sons. So that means nobody from this family is listed on the new census. Verse 4. These ladies say, "Why should the name of our father be taken away from his clan because he had no son? Give to us a possession among our father's brothers." So they are like, this is not fair. Our family line should have gotten specific property in the promised land. But because of a fluke of genetics, because our dad only threw girls instead of boys, our family is being cut off from the inheritance. And that's not right. So Moses brought their case before He Who Is, and He Who Is said to Moses, "The daughters of Zelophehad are right. They are correct. This is not fair." And they might not have been the only ones in this boat, because we're talking about a lot of people here. And so a rarity, such as a family that only has daughters, may actually present itself several different times. But these guys, these ladies, are the ones that set the case law in place. The daughters of Zelophehad are right. You shall give them possession as an inheritance among their father's brothers and transfer the inheritance of their father to them. Now, the way this is going to work, by the way, is these ladies are married, I'm sure. And so the oldest son of their family is going to inherit dad's property. The second son born to this family is going to inherit mom's inheritance in the name of granddad Zelophehad. And so that's the way it's going to work. And so here is the case law described. Verse 8. "You shall speak to the people of Israel," God says, "if a man dies and has no son, then you shall transfer his inheritance to his daughter," oldest daughter evidently, and then she's going to give it to her second oldest son, because her first oldest son is going to inherit dad's property. Now, if he has no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance to his brothers. So we're trying to keep the inheritance closest to the family line. If he has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to his father's brothers. If he has, if his father has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to the nearest kinsman of his clan, and he shall possess it. So the idea is responsibility for a specific piece of property is going to pass along family lines of inheritance. And now, exceptions to that rule are more clearly delineated. And rights of redemption are going to follow these same sorts of rules as well, which is why it will be triggered when we get to the story of Ruth and how Naomi's family property ends up having to be redeemed by a close relative. Actually, there's a couple of them competing for it, but eventually it is Boaz who is the closest redeemer that wants to do it. And so I'll kind of talk about these sorts of rules later when we get to those stories. And so it shall be for the people of Israel a statute and a rule as He Who Is commanded Moses. So because there's a lot of death happening and a lot of talk of inheritance and going into the promised land, we then come back to the reality that Moses is not going to be going into the promised land. So let's engage at verse 12 about that. He who is said to Moses, go up into this mountain of Abarim. That's the high country to the immediate east of the plains of Moab. It's where Mount Pisgah is located. It's also where Peor is located, where the Baal thing happened. So go up into that little ridgeline and see the land that I have given to the people of Israel. So go up there, and you'll have a nice view up and down the Jordan Dead Sea Valley. When you've seen it, you also shall be gathered to your people as your brother Aaron was, because you rebelled against my word in the wilderness of Zin when the congregation quarreled, failing to uphold me as holy at the waters before their eyes. And then there's a little note here. These are the waters of Meribah of Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. So Moses is being told, we're coming close to you dying now because you don't get to go in the promised land. So the place where you're going to do that is right up there above you. That's where you're going to go. I'll give you a chance to see an awful lot of the property at a distance. I think God probably gives him supernatural sight in order to see it. But once you get to see it, then you're going to have happen to you just like what happened to your brother. You're going to die. And that prompts this from Moses, verse 15. Moses spoke to he who is, saying, let he who is, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of he who is may not be sheep or as sheep that have no shepherd. So Moses, acting as that intercessor with a heart, says, God, please give them a solid replacement for me.